We're doing a class on Mishlei. Mishlei is Proverbs. A quick intro to Mishlei. Mishlei was one of the books written by Shlomo HaMelech. Gabriel, I need you to shift the drop for the camera. Sorry. Thank you. Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, in his wisdom, wrote the book of Shir Hashirim, Song of Songs. He wrote the book of Mishlei, Proverbs. He wrote the book of Kohelet, Ecclesiastes. So Shlomo HaMelech left us wonderful work. So the Nitziv writes in his introduction to his commentary on Shir Hashirim, the Song of Songs, that Shlomo HaMelech initially wrote, compiled many different songs that were part of the Jewish tradition. Not all of Song of Songs were his songs. He took different songs that were in our tradition and he put them together. Obviously, he wrote what he wrote in the Song of Songs, and that is the Song of Songs. So this is in the commentary of the Nitziv in his introduction to the Song of Songs. When we come to Proverbs, so we find that Proverbs was written over the course of decades and probably centuries. Shlomo HaMelech left behind thousands and thousands of Proverbs. And he compiled the initial work of Proverbs. But within the work we have, it says, Gam Eile Mishlei Shlomo. These are also Proverbs of King Solomon. Asher etiku anshei Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda, that the men of Chizkiyahu, the king of Judea, copied into Proverbs. So the book itself tells you that there were additions. Just as in the book of Tehillim, we learned last week, Kalu Tefilot David Ben Ishai. The chapter concluded with, this is the end of King David's works. And we discussed in our introduction to Tehillim that it says in the Medrash, Rashi quotes it at the beginning of Tehillim, that Tehillim was in fact composed by 10 composers. David HaMelech arranged a large part of Tehillim. But Tehillim Psalms was written by many people. We have the sons of Korach, we have Moshe Rabbeinu, we have Adam HaRishon, we have David HaMelech, we have Shlomo, we have many different chapters compiled by, we have Yedutun, we have 10 different composers to Tehillim, our sages say. So when we come to Mishlei, we are coming to a work that was compiled partially by Shlomo, and partially by later generations, as we mentioned, by Chizkiyahu, it says earlier on in Mishlei. So we're up to what they call the 27th chapter. And we'll start again with the first pasuk, even though we read it. Shlomo HaMelech says, Al titalel v'yom machar. Don't take pride today about what will be tomorrow. Because you don't know what tomorrow will give birth to. You don't know what tomorrow will bring. Maybe tomorrow things will happen that will change all of your plans. So don't take pride in what you believe you will accomplish tomorrow. You don't know. And sometimes we make mistakes. People enter a deal and they're confident that it's going to be successful. And so they take on a good mortgage, and then suddenly they don't have their job 2 years later. One of the secrets to financial success is to try as much as possible to build up and not build on the future. There was a store not far from here, a hardware store that I used to buy by. I met them on the eve of Pesach when I came to do Bedikas Chametz. And as I come in, I walk through the door, there's an explosion, and our pipe burst, the pipe to the sink. So we have water gushing into the house. And go find a hardware store that's open the eve of Pesach. I found them, and ever since then I tried to patronize them. They gave me the tools I needed, and I was able to fix whatever I could so that we could actually go into Pesach normally. One day I walk into the store and there's a new guy behind the counter. I ask him, are you a new worker? He says, no, I'm a new owner. So I said, that's wonderful. Good luck with the new store. You have a lot of good things here. So we became friendly. And then he says to me, you see how dark the store is? I'm going to change everything here. I'm going to make it more light. I'm going to make sure that every customer can see every product. I'm going to make this store a much nicer store. So I said, that's a great idea. How's it going so far? Because what I didn't tell him was that the previous owner, as much as he had helped me out, was a very not nice guy. Very not nice. He'd always fight with his customers. And I see a nice guy behind the counter, so even though I tried patronizing the previous owner, he was there for me when I needed him. He was very unpleasant to work with. Now there was a nice owner, I figured that'll only help the business succeed now, because people would always, every time I was in the store, the owner was fighting with people. Now I figured if he's nice, then we'll have, the customers will want to come back, so it, the business will thrive. So he said, yeah, ever since I took over, the numbers only went up. I saw how much money he was making when he had the store, and ever since I took over, things have only gotten better. So I didn't want to explain to him what I figured, why things had only gotten better. So he said to me, yeah, things have gotten better, and that's why I'm going to invest and make it even better. So I said to him, I don't want to mind your business, but I studied a little bit about finance. Can I give you a tip? He says, sure, I'm new at all this. You tell me what. I said, what would happen if instead of making the store better this year, you would save up this year and have the money to make it better next year? And instead of taking a loan from the bank, you'd come with all the money you need because you're making good profit now. And then next year you'd improve on the store. You would have to hold off, meaning you're assuming you'd make more money if you made the store better now. But whatever that you're losing by that is probably offset by the interest you'd be paying the bank. And then you could pay it all off on the spot. Wouldn't that make more sense? He said, I don't know, I have to think about it. I said, well, one of the tips they taught us is that successful people work that way. Whenever possible, they save up towards their purchases. They don't pay them off. They don't spend their life paying off old debt. They work to make enough, and then they work to save enough, and then they buy what they think they should buy, and they have a lot of money to pay for it. They might take a loan, but they'll have the money to pay for that loan. They'll take the loan because it makes financial sense to take the loan. Maybe it makes sense to have some of the assets liquid. I come back 2-3 weeks later. He says, you saved my life. He says, in his line of business, every day another salesman walks in and offers him to buy a lot of things. And every day he's telling himself, if I buy A, I'll only have to sell 2 or 3 and I'll already be in profit. If I buy B, he said, there's a constant desire to enter debt. And ever since he thought about what we had discussed, you didn't look here, right? Ever since then, he shifted his whole business model, and he sees the success. He says, I could sleep at night. He said, when I go into debt, then I'm always worried. Will tomorrow be a good day? Will I be able to pay my debt tomorrow? He said, now that he's working this way, he entered this system, and he can sleep at night. He doesn't buy what he can't afford. He knows he'll grow his business slowly. And like this, he doesn't have to fret over it. I'm mentioning this because many people failed because of this pasuk. They did not know this pasuk. People had an income of $1 million a year. So they built themselves a mansion of $10 million. And they figured, it's not a problem for me to pay the mortgage. I'm making $1 million a year. But then their money went kaput. And they suddenly found themselves in problems. I apologize, I mentioned tonight that I'm on call. So it's very tempting. People are making money in the stock market. Their stocks are going up. We had a guy where I once learned in a yeshiva, there was a guy there who was worth, I don't know, $30-40 million. And then when the market crashed, he lost everything. Everything. He had it all invested, and he had it on margin, but he was in such profit that he didn't think it mattered until it did. This was now 2008 or 2001.
Right. Okay.
This was when 9/11 hit.
Okay.
So he lost everything.
Wow.
So here, until that day, he was living modestly, thinking he had, you know, in his stocks, he had $30 million. And after that day, he was living modestly because he couldn't even afford to pay his mortgage on his house. Shlomo Melch warns, "Al titalel biyom machar." Don't take pride in tomorrow. Ki lo tedam hayeled yom. You do not know what tomorrow will bring. And that's something that's very hard for us to remember. When things are going good, people tend to think they'll always go good. When things are going bad, people tend to think they'll always go bad. That's why people don't buy stocks when they're low. When the market crashes, people are sure it'll keep going down. When the market's going up, people are sure the market will keep going up. And that's why most people buy high and sell low. Don't take pride in tomorrow. You don't know what tomorrow will bring. An example we just saw of that was Brexit. Everyone was confident that it wouldn't happen. All the media said it wouldn't happen. The banks weren't prepared. I know one person who sold the pound short, and he made just on that $10,000. Boom.
Wow.
Because he said it might happen.
The recession is the best example. Four people bet against the recession, but predicted it. It all made billions.
So, Shlomo HaMelech says, and again, it's hard to remember this. When people have a job, it's hard for them to think they won't have a job. When people have their health, it's hard for them to think they won't have their health. When people have their spouse, it's hard to think they might not always have that. People are slow to buy life insurance, especially young couples. It's a joke. When you're a young couple, it could cost you 15 shekel a month to have life insurance. So why not get for you and your spouse life insurance? We have to wake up to this concept. You don't know what tomorrow will bring. Yes?
You said once that you always forget how lousy it is to be
allowed. Yeah. Yep. Pasuk bet. Yalelcha zar velo fiicha nochri ve'al sefatecha. Yalelcha zar. Let a foreigner praise you. Velo fiicha, not your own mouth. Person shouldn't be the one to tell others how great he is. Right, don't toot your own horn. The current president of the United States wrote a book. He wrote a book. And someone very dear to me brought me that book as a gift. And I didn't want to hurt their feelings because I didn't want that book in my house. And I didn't want to give it back to them because I didn't want to hurt their feelings. So I wasn't sure what to do. So I took it as bathroom reading for a few days. And then I gave it back. And I said, here, I can quote you some despicable quotes from this book. And you can enjoy it. You can give it to someone else. I can't have that in my house. I can't. So one of the things he writes there is, toot your own horn because no one else will. That's what he writes. And that's not true. That's not true. Meaning he,
for him it might be.
He practices what he preaches, right. The Pasuk tells us don't toot your own horn. Yalel chazar, have others praise you. Velo ficha, and not yourself. So here I want to give you a tip that can really help you in all of life. It's an easy tip. You can all do it. And probably 80% of you won't. But it's an easy thing to do. And that is get letters of recommendation. Wherever you are, wherever you worked, if they still remember you, if they still know you, get a letter. You're learning at Machon Meir, get a letter. When you come to an interview, they want to hear your strong points and your weak points. I hate that question. They ask you at an interview, what are your strong points? So I feel like saying, yeah, lil chazar velo ficha. The Pasuk says, I shouldn't be the one to tell you that. So instead, you can give a letter of recommendation. It's not me recommending myself. Here's the recommendation so-and-so wrote. A letter of recommendation speaks volumes. We had a student here who had dropped out of high school. He did not have a degree to show for himself. And he studied here for a month and a half, 2 months. And I told you guys the story about him on our way to the Machon tonight, how they found an illness by him, and that's why he decided he has to leave. So when he was leaving, I felt very bad. We have a great relationship till today. I said, before you leave, let me write you a letter of recommendation. And I wrote the letter. I wrote, he was only by us for 2 months. But in those 2 months, we were able to enjoy his brilliance, his sincerity, his academic excellence, his involvement in class, his uniqueness, his unique perspective on things. I wrote a very nice letter of recommendation after he paid me 50,000 shekel. Joking, he didn't pay a penny. But I wrote him a very nice letter of recommendation. What? No, but he went on to work for the state of New York, and he called me up after he got his job, and he said, I walked into there, I had nothing to show them. I didn't have a GED.
Wow.
I had only your letter of recommendation.
Wow.
He gave him the letter, they read it, and they were willing to give him a job. And last time we spoke, he was married with kids. He had just gone up the ranks in that job, and he was doing really well. He was doing really well, and he didn't have certificates. He had a letter of recommendation, one letter. I'm saying, you guys can get one from the Machon. You don't have to get it from me. You don't have to get it from me. You can get it from Rav Listman. But wherever you go, you volunteer in a place, you learn in a place, you have a professor that likes you in college. There are many times we come into contact with people who we work with, and we can get a letter of recommendation from them. Down the road, whether you will or won't use it, you'll always have the choice. You'll have it in your binder. You'll scan it and email it. You'll have it in your email file. You'll decide whether to use it or not. But that way you could fulfill the pasuk Shlomo Amel says, let others compliment you. Don't praise yourself. Now, where this comes up in a slightly challenging way is in job interviews and in dating. On the one hand, you need the interviewer and the girl you're dating to know the positive things about yourself. On the other hand, no one likes a person that toots his own horn. So you have to find the balance where in conversation you can mention things without going overboard. So I didn't hear you.
Can you give your date letters of recommendation for past girls?
You could, it's a bad idea. You could do whatever you want.
Oh man, that's messed up, man.
So on a date, I'm saying in conversation, you have to think how to mention things in passing without sounding ostentatious. You don't want to sit there and say, well, when I volunteered in the earthquakes in Chile and I saved 30 people's lives single-handedly, I was wondering if the Hechsher on my Snickers bar was good enough. In passing, you just mention it. No. That's a little bit obvious. But on the other hand, you can mention, I visited Chile. I was a volunteer at the time at the Israeli Volunteer Corps. And when there was an earthquake, I had the good fortune of working with an excellent team. And it was a very meaningful part of my life when I volunteered there. And I know I saved certain lives. And I got to play a pivotal role in people's lives. That's something meaningful to me. It's a part of who I am. So you mention something in passing, she gets a picture of who you are. You didn't come to brag. The same thing in a job interview. You don't have to come bragging. You can say, my responsibilities in this position were such and such. I definitely learned from the interaction with different people. It can be I learned from the boss. It can be I learned from the coworkers. And as you discuss things in a way that's honest and not focused on praising yourself, they will get the understanding of your strengths, your weaknesses, whether you're a team player or not. There are ways to get the points across. They want to hear these points. They want to know your skill set. They want to know if you're a team player. They want to know if you could organize your thoughts. They want to know if you can present yourself well. So if you think through how you present yourself, you can do this without praising yourself. As Shlomo HaMelech warns, let others praise you. So this is, again, a balancing act. Pasuk Gimel. And by the way, a tip as far as interviewing. If there's an interview which you think you might take the job, but you're not sure if you're going to take the job, very often people say, I'm not going, because an interview is a scary thing, it's an uncomfortable thing, I don't want to go. So a very good businessman once told me, go to every interview you can go to. He said, even if you in the end you're pretty sure you won't take the job, you get better at interviewing with every interview. You will do interviews better. So go. It's a service to you. You're gaining a skill. Pasuk Gimel. Kovid even v'netel achol. The weight of a big stone or the weight of a lot of sand. Sand can carry a tremendous weight also, right? You could have a lot of weight in sand. V'cha'as evil kaved mishenehem. If you've carried a heavy stone or carried sacks of sand, you should know that the anger of a person who is a bad person, an evil, a fool, so that is going to be more weighty than both of those. Aleph Vav Yud Lamed. Okay. So he's talking about the anger of the evil. When a person's a fool, so one of the traits of a fool is they allow themselves to anger. Think of that next time you want to get angry. It's the trait of a fool, and the anger of the fool is dangerous because it knows no bounds. I once had one of our kids lost it. And lost it to the point that my wife was in the middle of driving and he started hitting her as she was driving, endangered the whole car. Lost it. He tried to throw one of the kids off the car as my wife was driving. He got upset at his sibling. That's it. There's no end. His anger could go anywhere. So I took the kid into the room and I spoke to him gently. And I said to him, do you think that what you did was right? So he said, no. I said, do you think that you endangered people by what you did? He said, I didn't think of that. Now you're talking about the kid's 5 years old, right? But the kid has to learn to control his anger. So I said, do you think you're going to do that again? And he said, well, they got me angry. I said, yeah, they got you angry. So you just have to realize that you're not going to get, I don't remember what the treat was, there was like a very big thing that was going to happen, all the kids were going to go on a trip or get a certain treat, I don't remember what. I said, you're not getting that, it's just not happening. So he lost it. He got really upset at me. They got me upset. They weren't fair to me. They were picking on me. You don't know what happened. I said, okay, I'm listening. You tell me what happened. Because I don't think there's anything that warrants endangering a whole car of people just because they got you upset. So to a five-year-old, like... and then he was ready to hit me. So I held his hands. And I said, now we're going to discuss what other punishments you're going to get. Because that was just the beginning. And the kid continues yelling. And I said, well, the list is about to get much longer as you continue yelling. And I mentioned another thing that was very dear to him. And I said, you're going to lose that in a minute. And the kid's yelling at me. And I said, if you don't go quiet right now, you're going to really regret it. So the kid went quiet. He saw I meant business. I said, now I want you to see something. When you thought you had what to lose, you regained control. Meaning, you lost control when we started this because you got upset at me, so you were ready to hit me. You regained control when you realized, hey, I'm really going to lose if I continue losing control. So that means that it's within your power to gain control or lose control. You understand that? Say, now that it's said. I said, so now you have to understand that I'm going to hold you completely accountable. And I'm going to take you all the way to the end. Anytime you lose control, you're going to suffer from it 10 times as much. You're going to regret it so much. You should know the punishment I told you you're going to get. You're going to pay it out all the way. And that's just the beginning. If you ever lose control like that again, where you hit your mother, or try to throw someone off of a moving car, or do things that can endanger other people just because you got upset, that's never going to happen again. And you know what? Since that day, the kid has control. Since that day, it's never happened that he lost control. Never. Now, Shlomo HaMelech warns us, the anger of the fool. What's wrong with the anger of the fool? The fool says, but I'm angry, so I can do what I want. So if he's angry, he could tell his wife he's going to divorce her. If he's angry, he could tell the kid, I'm sorry I ever gave birth to you. There are all kinds of vicious things that people say when they're angry. You guys are shocked? I've seen it happen. A person can undermine everything good in their life, destroy everyone around them because I'm angry. No. Shlomo HaMelech says there's nothing that can be more destructive. Esav is described as Evrato Shemar HaNetzach. His anger holds on forever. You can't hold on to anger, and you can't let anger control you. The Gemara says when a person does something out of anger, it's as though he worshipped an idol. Why? Because when he got angry, he said, I wasn't in control. Well, if you're not in control, then today your anger will take you to do A, and tomorrow your anger could take you to worship an idol. There's no difference. Meaning our responsibility as human beings is to hold on to control. Ah, the person got me upset? Okay. One of the kids once did something that really I should have reacted to. My wife asked me, why didn't you react? I said, I was upset. My wife said, yeah, and? I said, I knew I was upset. I wasn't sure I was calculating it right. How could I react? If my emotion is now what's acting, not my mind, not my seichel, so I might not do what's right. I can't. Anger can't control us. Anger is an important trait. It's got to be there. We can't let things happen and be cold to everything that goes on in our life. There are things that have to anger us. There has to come a point where you say, hey, I can't deal with this anymore. This is wrong. And there has to be a reaction at some point. But not that the anger controls us. We have to control the anger. And that's why Shlomo HaMelech warns us about the weight of a fool's anger. I was helping someone manage an apartment. They were in Chutzlartz. They asked me to help manage their apartment. They had a bunch of tenants. One tenant was a very problematic person. He'd fight with other tenants all the time, and he, very problematic human being. So we reached a point where the other tenants came and said, we have to leave, we can't live with this guy. We have to end the contract early. I said, okay, we'll work with you. Let's find alternate tenants, let's make this work. Along comes the problematic tenant and says, no, I'm staying, and they're all paying the rent. They're paying the rent, and I'm not leaving. So I said, in the contract, your name doesn't appear. You know, you don't have a right to stay. They signed the contract without you. They took you on. Now they don't feel like you don't have a leg to stand on. There's nothing, I'm saying, you don't have a contract. And then I realized that I'm never going to win with this guy. I realized he said to me, I want you to give me back the security payment. I said, you didn't pay it. You're not entitled to it. In the contract it says, it goes back to them, not to you. I can't give it back to you. So the guy started doing a bunch of things. And then I realized, I said, what am I going to do? I'm going to fight him. And then he'll do vandalism. And then he'll destroy the next tenant's life. And I'm going to have to put up cameras. And then I'll take him to court. And then where will it end? I said to him, how much money do you want? So the guy told me a sum. I said, fine, it's yours. If you're out by this date and goodbye, it's yours, that's fine. So I said to the guy whose apartment was, I said, you can fight him, it'll cost you much more, getting a lawyer and the vandalism he'll do, and you can fight him, but you're getting a cheap bargain. So, well, fast forward, 7 years later, I get a phone call. A guy tells me, I know you don't know me, I have this tenant, he's a really problematic guy, I'm going to court with him, I just want to know your history, did you have the same tenant, was he the same problematic guy? Turns out it's the same guy. This fellow took him to court, this fellow went all out, he took a lawyer, he fought him, he put him behind bars, he did everything for him. I told the landlord, I said to the guy, I'll do, you know, it's whatever you want, but you're paying small fry compared to the headache you could have if you don't. Fine. Story's not over. The guy leaves. He's happy. He says he got, he did me one over. Great, fine. A year later, vandalism starts in the apartment. So I call over the guy and I tell him, you know, we have you on camera destroying things in the apartment. So the guy says, what do I have to do with it? I said, no, you're the only guy who would do vandalism here. And I have a neighbor that saw you do it. So we're going to go to court. Now we're going to go to court. And now I have, you're going to sit in jail. Now the next step is you're going to sit in jail. I until now I was willing to come towards you. Now it's over. Now we're going to court. Now we're going to police. Now you're going to go to jail. What's my point? I was concerned initially, Kasevil. Shlomo Amer says when you're dealing with a fool, so then his anger knows no bounds. So this guy's a fool. He's got a problem. The guy didn't believe me. So he went to court. And when I produced pictures, that's when he backed down. I said, you want to continue? He told me he's suing me. I said, fine. Yeah. Doesn't matter. He had no case. He had nothing. So when I showed him pictures, that's when he took a step back. But until that point, the guy knew he had done the vandalism. The guy knew he was the one behind it. The fact that I forewent a year earlier when I forewent it because of this pasuk. Because when you're dealing with the fool, you have no idea where his anger will go. He could take a rock, throw it through a window. There, you lost 200 shekel. You might have lost the 10 and 2. Right? He could show up and destroy you, the lock on the door. He could turn off their water outside. There's so many things he can do that to make a tenant's life miserable until you catch him. So Shlomo Amar warns you. You should know the anger of a fool is worse. Sometimes it's better to forgo. I'll give you what you want. Goodbye. Leave me alone. You'll run your life. I'll run my life. Then there comes a point where you can't. Where you know, if I'm not going to put an end to this, It's not going to end. So we set up cameras. We caught him, and we had the cameras as evidence. Until he saw the evidence, he didn't back down. When he saw it with his own eyes that we caught him on camera, then suddenly he sang the tune. Today, I think he's behind bars. As far as I know, the second landlord told me, I'm not giving in. I'm not going to let another landlord end up with a guy like this. I'm not. I'm going with him all the way, and it sounded like he did. That's his choice. Shlomo Amalek warns us. There's a certain anger, you can't win. If he's a fool, stay away. You're not going to win. Maybe. Maybe. Right. Achzariyut chema v'shetef ha'af. Shlomo Melch warns us, don't think that anger remains silent. Anger leads a person to cruelty. Achzariyut chema. When a person's angry, they can justify to themselves to do the most cruel things because right now they're angry. And that's why I quoted you those vicious sentences that people have said out of anger. Vishay tefaf. And in anger, a person's ready to wipe everything, wipe the slate clean. You ever see an angry person like push everything off the table and then they realize they just knocked their own laptop on the floor, right? But in their anger, they're ready to shetef, wash everything. They don't notice what they're really doing. Umiyamod lifnei kina. Shlomo Amel says, but you should know that there's something worse than anger, and that is jealousy. When a person is jealous, or when a person is vengeful, so then he is worse. And the reason is because when a person is angry, so then their focus is on hurting the other one. When a person is jealous, jealousy can lead a person to a point where they say, even if it costs me, I'm going to make them pay. Jealousy can lead a person to more cruelty than anger will. And that's why kina is worse. That's the idea of, what was it, Romeo and Juliet? Killed her with himself, right? No?
Yep.
If I can't have you, no one can have you. Tova tochachat megula me'ava misutarit. When a person rebukes us openly and it stems from an inner love, that is a wonderful thing. Tova, tochachat megula, revealed rebuke is good when it is me'ahava, when it stems from love that is mesutaret, that's in. So, I didn't see this in the commentaries, but to my mind, the pasuk is telling us the following message. Why does the pasuk speak about a hidden love? Why isn't it an overt love? And I think the pshat in the pasuk is like this. Very often we mean well. We're going to come and tell the person, you know, you're making this mistake, and it would really be in your interest if you change A or B or C. And we feel like, is there any way I could get the point across, and they'll understand that I mean for their own good? We run into this challenge tremendously when we are parents, and specifically when we are in-laws or grandparents. when we see our children do stupid things, so then in their interest, you want to tell them. Sometimes you run into this problem as a big brother. You see your little sister or your little brother doing things which, in their interest, you want to tell them, don't do that, that's stupid. It's in their interest, right? So why does Shlomo describe it as a hidden love? And I think the pshat is, Shlomo is revealing to us, as much as you love them, recognize that at the time that you're rebuking them, your love is hidden. They will not see it as love. The nature of man is that when someone rebukes me, I hate him. I don't like him right now. He's telling me I'm wrong. He's telling me I shouldn't do what I'm doing. He's telling me I'm making mistakes. There's a natural reaction, and that is, we don't feel loved when someone rebukes us. We don't. And as much as logically we say they mean that they have my best interest at heart, that's not...
So how could the person be a good person that's like off the deal?
Maybe... Example? Lead by example. When a relative sees that you who learn Torah are so sensitive, are so caring, are so giving, so then that attracts them. When a soldier sees that his friends in the army who learned Torah are willing to do more for other people, when everyone's tired, they're going to stay and help. When someone has to give in and say, I'll stay for Shabbos, they give in. So then they say, okay, I see what Torah does to a person. I see they become kinder people. I think that's the best message. And the Gemara says that in our generation, we don't... We haven't reached that level where we can say we love a person who rebukes us. We're not on that level. We should be there, but we're not. The Gemara already says it. Meaning 2 millennia ago they weren't there. Okay. What'd you say? It's a high level. We'll do one more pasuk. It's the same theme, and then we'll move on to Tehillim or Parsha and ordering pizza. The pasuk says, "Ne'emanim pitzei ohev." When someone who loves you wounds you, so then you know they did it for your best interest. They're not... okay, what does this mean? Yes. If they love you, then you can usually trust that what they did is for your best interest. Now, let's take a few examples. I can never forget a scene I saw as a little boy. I must have been 5 or 6 years old, and I saw a group of people, teenagers, ganging up on a guy and forcing him to drink water. And it was a guy who had a drinking problem, and his friends kept forcing him not to drink alcohol, to drink water, to drink other things. And I remember, till today, the scene of him fighting to try and get a bottle of alcohol, and then fighting him to drink water. And if I remember correctly, this part of the scene I don't remember enough, I must have been a kid at the park who walked off, and my parents didn't know what I was witnessing. They literally tied him up, and they wouldn't let him get to the bottle. I remember a part where they were like all four of them ganging up and holding him back, and he was trying to get to a bottle and drink more, and they told him, you're going to kill yourself, you can't do this. So do they love him or do they hate him? No.
I don't think that was done out of love.
No?
I don't think that was done out of love.
Right, it wasn't.
That's what I'm saying,
No, you see not. No, David loved Avshalom, but Avshalom did not love David. No, but again, I don't know.
Very rarely you answer the question no. The
idea here is that if someone really cares for you, and they had to do something, then you can trust they did it for a good reason. They did it because they care for you, because they want what's good for you. And that's, again, it has to be that you have confidence that they really love you, they really care for you. And then, even if they've done something that you're very upset about and it hurts you, you can trust they did it for a good reason. Now, they might have been wrong. I mean, people aren't always right. What? They did the best they could to do what's right, hopefully. The flip side is, when your enemy kisses you, you should know every kiss is too much. Even though it looks like he's kissing you, if you know that he hates you, be very, very wary. When people who are your enemies try to be nice to you, be very wary. I was on the bus 3-4 weeks ago, and there was an Arab bus driver, and I asked him, I said, you know, yesterday I left my wagon on the bus, do you know where I'm supposed to call? Because I've been calling the lost and found, I've been calling the lost and found, and no one's answering. So he said to me, yeah, I'm going to give you the one who's in charge of the lost and found, I'm going to give you his personal cell phone, but you should know he gets real busy at 7 in the morning. You have to call him at 5 o'clock in the morning if you want to get through to him. He said, you want to call the regular number, keep calling the regular number. If you want to talk to him, he comes on shift on duty at 5 o'clock in the morning, and you have to call him at 5. So I remembered this pasuk, Na'atarot Nishikot Soneh. And the whole bus ride, he's going through his contacts until finally he gives me the guy's number, and he tells me, here's the number, and this is the lost and found, this is the personal cell phone for the guy. And I couldn't figure out why the guy would spend so much time on the bus ride to help me out. I said, you know, maybe he wants to be nice, but he worked really hard. And I was smart enough, I don't know how, that I didn't call at 5 o'clock in the morning. I decided I'm going to call him at regular business hours and try my luck then. And I called the guy at like 11 o'clock in the morning. And I say, hi, did I get to the lost and found? And he goes, no. I said, are you the guy in charge of the lost and found? He goes, no. I said, do you work for Egged? Do you show up at the Egged bus stop at 5 o'clock in the morning? He goes, no. I said, and what would happen if I would have called you this morning at 5 o'clock in the morning? Because someone doesn't like you. Someone gave me your number and told me to call you at 5 o'clock this morning. He said, you would have woken me. Shlomo HaMelech says, someone gives you kisses.
Who can I screw over today?
Right, that was an eye-opener to me.
Just pick a number, any number.
No, he looked for someone. He was, he wanted, he had someone he wanted me to do this to. And he was so nice about it. So Shlomo HaMelech tells us, I don't know. I didn't call him the first call at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm saying I questioned. It seemed a little strange. I said, let me check before I believe that someone who might hate me is giving me so many kisses. Let me, being so nice to me, working so hard to get me the personal cell phone. Let me try. Let me check. So what did we learn today? Shlomo HaMelech taught us, don't trust tomorrow, you don't know what's coming. And we discussed the idea of taking mortgages and assuming our income is constant. Then Shlomo HaMelech told us, don't praise yourself. We discussed the importance of letters of recommendation. Shlomo HaMelech warned us of the anger of the fool, and so that anger could lead to cruelty, etc. And then Shlomo warned us about jealousy. And finally, Shlomo HaMelech said that when we rebuke, if it stems from love, we should realize that someone who's rebuking us is doing us a favor, and that those who love us, even when they do things that might be painful to us, we can, if they really love us, then we can trust they're trying to do what's good for us. And the flip side is someone who we have reason to believe hates us, so we should be very wary, even when they try to give us kisses, pay attention to what's really going on.